Hello and welcome to the Relationship Matters podcast. From the boardroom to the living room, we believe relationship matters. I'm your host, Katie Churchman, and in this episode, Marita Frichon is talking about life-giving and life-draining behaviours. What gives you life and what drains you? And which do you bring more of to your family, colleagues and community? Whilst we all like to think of ourselves as life-givers, could there be small areas of our lives where we are in fact draining others dry? In this episode, Marita talks about becoming conscious of life-giving and life-draining qualities, the stages of grief, and also how the two are more intertwined than we might realise. Can life-giving qualities exist within life-draining experiences, like grief? Here's Marita Frichon to explain more. Marita, you mentioned wanting to talk about life-giving versus life-draining today, and I'd love you to explain what you mean by that firstly.
Thank you, Katie. I think that what we experience around us at the moment, whether we're looking at our local news or whether we're talking to friends and colleagues or when we look at global news, what we experience is something about opposites, that there are people at the moment that really want to defocus from what's hard and are looking at what is, what I think of as life-giving. So we see a lot of emergence of meditation sessions of different, there's now an app that you can get that gives you 24 exercises for sitting in at your desk, 24 exercises for getting out of your bed, 24. So all of those kinds of things, I think, live in the direction of life-giving. What is it that I can do that'll have me get up and experience and find something that actually is life-giving to me when I'm surrounded with difficulty? On the other hand, there is so much evidence of suffering and grief. And I think that us as a society, and I don't know whether I can speak for the world, but certainly countries that I've lived in, we are not always good at the grieving side, of owning that side. And I think that there's an interaction between life-giving and grief, that if we don't honor grief, then life-giving begins to be very, very difficult to go after. So
how does energy play out in these two opposites? Is life-giving energetic and life-draining the opposite?
I think that there is an energy increase when we think in terms of life-giving, that whether it's meditation that centers people to go quieter, that in itself has, it's not like it's high energy that has people jump up and down, but it's an energy that stabilizes and expands us as beings. When you think of exercise activity, that certainly is life-giving in terms of increasing energy. Even if I'm tired after this walk or run or whatever the session is, I am continuing to build stamina so that I will have more energy. So life-giving, I think, can have many different shapes and faces. It's not just high energy. Playing with the kids is both life-giving and draining. But there is a different emotional, energetic spike that happens. So I think that when we think about energy and life-giving, it's not just one energy pattern. I think there are many. And my thinking is that as we sit together today talking, I'm curious for people that are listening and for you, Katie, what are some of the things that you can identify in your own life that you were to think of as life-giving?
There are definitely certain people that you meet them and you know straight away you're going to feel energized and inspired. And then there are also those people who walk in the room and seem to bring the clouds with them. And they seem to take all of the life out of us,
yes,
like draining a battery.
Yes.
So people certainly create that experience for me. What about yourself?
I think some of that, I think people. I think that I'm going to out myself on to the globe again. I am a gamer, so I play computer games because computer games tend to take my attention into the creative and away from the consensus reality around me. So it's just that shift in focus that has me then be able to go back to my partner, my work, my whatever, with a sharper and different focus. So I think that's one. Certainly playing with the dogs and, you know, taking them out for walks too. There's another piece that I miss, and it's one of those things that in the research around longevity, that they find that the single biggest factor that people share who are 100 years and older, you know, that whole high population that lives longer, is what they call social construct. It is not so much the life partner or the best friend. Those are second and third. But it is being able to walk down the street and say hi to somebody that's walking their dog. You don't know them. It's being able to go into the store and have a joke with the person behind the counter or with the person in front or behind. So those are social constructs. I think we have lost a lot of those social constructs given what's happening at the moment. So for me, that's a loss. That's one of the things like, I feel sometimes feel as like, maybe I can just go to Safeway and go and chat and, you know, make jokes with the people that are behind the counter. But there's less of that. So I think there are different things. Those are some of the life-giving things for me that is, it's interesting because that's what the research points out too. These are the kinds of things. When we're thinking about one of the other things that was a fascinating thing for me was that when you look at animal shelters now are empty.
Wow.
Yeah. When people went into isolation, there was a massive increase in adoption of dogs and cats. So much so that there are pictures on the web where some of the shelters literally are empty.
Oh my gosh.
So that tells us something about life-giving. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's interesting we're focusing on life-giving because I suppose we all like to think of ourselves as life-givers, right?
Yes. But yes.
I'm sure at some points in our life we are unconsciously or consciously life drainers. How can we become conscious to that so that we perhaps do it less?
Yeah. I think that I have more control over what is life giving for me than I am about what is draining. Because the life draining pieces has to do with loss. And 99.9% of the time, that was not created by me necessarily. I have no control over it. And I think that's where we as a global population, I think that's where we're sitting at the moment. All of us are in some stage of grief and loss. And unless I can recognize that, so there's the complexity that is me or you, and it's again, it's the Kubler-Ross five stages of grief and loss. That they're talking about, that the first one is denial. And the second one is, second one is anger. There's a dance between denial and anger. The third one is bargaining. The fourth one is depression. And then there's acceptance. And I had to look at some of my notes because that's the sequence that she's described, that when somebody dies or when there's a loss, we first go into denial. They're not going to die. It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. The second place is there is an anger. I'm angry at what's happening in my life. I'm angry about the virus. I am angry about the fact that my kids can't go to school. I'm in anger. So anger dances between denial and anger. And denial will go to anger, and anger will go back to denial. It's not going to happen. And next week, it's going to be okay. So that's the dance between those two. And if we begin to get to the bargaining piece, it's the, okay, here's what I'll do. I will stay at home. I will shelter in place. And then in a couple of weeks, I can go back to the normal. This is bargaining. And if you're looking at governors in our country and the state and economy, there's a bargaining going on. Okay, this is serious, but if we can just do this and this, then it'll be better. That's the bargaining place. And when bargaining gets stopped, it goes back to anger. So there's a dance between these things. And then I think that the depression piece is when we realize I can't deny it, my anger is not going to help. Bargaining is not going to change it. And then we dive into that oppression of where it really feels untenable. We can't handle it. It's never going to be better. It's the worst possible thing. That's a natural stage as well. And from that, we move into acceptance. But here's the challenge. These things, since although these are the stages as they flow, it's not one-stop locations. They are iterative. I today may be in acceptance and busy building a different life. And then tomorrow, I wake up and get up and hear that another friend had died. And I'm back in anger. This is not fair. This is not right. So if you look at the complexity of that within our own selves, with our own inside team, our own players, then you can see how complex it is. But if you now begin to map it to everybody out there, that a lot of what we see as political reaction actually is a grief stage. It may be denial, it may be bargaining, it may be, but if you begin to look at the complexity of how we grieve and what we need to go through, grieving that which I have no control over, and I then look at today, I may be in the anger phase and you may be in the acceptance phase. And guess what? We're not going to have a great conversation. You know what I mean? So if you look at that with family and friends, where I think if there's one life-giving practice that we can leverage, but it's not always going to work, it would be to really bring awareness to what stage of grief am I in? And if I look over there at you and I listen to you, what stage are you in? Because if we can meet one another and I can say, I am angry, I am ready to, and I remember I had the privilege of working for 2 years in the London Hospital with Kubler-Ross while I was studying in medical social work. And one of the things that she used to say was, when people are angry, if they want to yell at God, yell at God, he can take it. It's us humans that can't. So I wonder what happens if we can begin to have that as a practice that goes, I cannot expect that you will be in the same stage that I am, because something might have happened that put you in a different place. I wonder whether that might not become a very different relationship builder or life-giving practice. Not easy. Not easy. It's not for sissies, that I can tell you.
So am I right in thinking that embracing grief, which is essentially a life-draining quality, is a life-giving
thing? I think so. I think so. That's a great question, Katie, because I think that is the complexity that we want to make it complicated. We want to start in one, go to the other, go to the next, and then it's done.
Yeah.
That's complicated. But grief and loss, certainly in the times that we're living in at the moment, where as humanity, we are in that place. So when I look at pictures on the web and I see animals over cities walking around, okay, that's life-giving for me. But then there's a moment again when I realize there's something that I will never have back. I will never again speak to that friend, or I will never again be able to have a headache without being afraid that I've got the virus. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's that dance. It's a dance we cannot avoid.
So it's quite yin yang, really, because life giving lives within life draining, and life draining lives within life giving. And we have to somehow hold that paradox.
Absolutely. We cannot have one without the other. And I think that our job also is, our brains are more or less built to remember the negative, because that is the flight and fight. If I know what's going to kill me, I can either flee from it or I can fight from it. That's how our primitive brain works. We're not so good at remembering the positive and the good. So that's where I go to my conversation with COVID. It's like, what a That's a good thing that you bring us, because I'm struggling with it. But there are some good things. There are animals roaming the streets. The earth is breathing. Well, that's not fair, because I'm not breathing well. So can you feel how the moment we accept one, it brings that other reaction in? So I would love for all of us to just, if we can use meditation or contemplation to begin to just figure out, which stage am I in? And what is it that I can do to help me sustain so that I can work through this? That too then becomes life-giving.
So can you be in two stages at once? Is that possible? Or three stages even?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what's so confusing is, again, we want to go to the complicated. I want to know that I'm strong, but I'm also weak. I want to know that I can clearly understand, but I also know I'm hugely confused. Oh, my God. So you could feel how it's that, I think, is also the path of right relationship, is being able to have compassion and acceptance for all of those, that any one of those things is not who I am. It's a part of me. And how do I honor that part and be in right relationship with it before I trounce it? Because shutting it down ain't going to help.
Yeah, right relationship with the paradox then, I guess.
Right relationship with the paradox, right relationship with all that is me, right relationship with all that is you, and picking my choices, what I can accept and what is not. So because there are choices, we can choose what we want to be with, but we also then we need to be able to choose how I want to be with that which I have no choice over.
Thank you, Marita. Do you have any final words for our listeners about holding that confusing, scary paradox right now?
Yeah, I think one of the things that all of us need at the moment is, on the one hand, we need to be able to pat ourselves on the shoulder and go, you're doing well. Given all that's happening, you are doing really well. Keep it up. And then go to our partner and go to our colleague and go, you are doing really well. Given all that's going on, you rock. Those kinds of things, because we cannot talk them out of the suffering, the difficulty, the grief, the loss, the mourning, because I don't believe that there's a single solitary human being on this planet in this moment that is not experiencing some kind of loss. And if we can strengthen one another and go, I see you, and what you do and what you be is enough. Thank you. That's a very different world for us to navigate this by.
I love that sense of enough. I actually have I am enough written on a wall in my house to remind me of it every single day.
That's great. That's great. I am enough. I see me. I see you. We are enough.
Absolutely. Thank you so
awesome.
Much, Marita.
Thank you, Katie. As always, love the conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Relationship Matters podcast, which, as well as exploring life-giving and life-draining qualities, also looked at the stages of grief. To recap, the five stages of grief are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, which are part of a framework which helps us to deal with loss. They are tools to help us to frame and identify what we may be feeling. But as Marita says, they're not stops on some linear timeline in grief. So whilst grief can be an incredibly life-draining experience, accepting it can bring life to the grieving process. One can exist within the other. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and do share it with people in your network you think will enjoy it too. And for further resources, articles, and to hear more about Marita's work, check out crrglobal.com. From the boardroom to the living room, we believe relationship matters.